Senator, it only just walks in after just arriving at the airport. Senator, let's talk for a moment about former Agriculture Secretary Butts. He resigned yesterday, and so far reactions have been mixed. There are a number of farmers groups who supported Butts, and there are a number of people who were calling for his resignation. Do you feel, in lieu of the fact that it appeared that Butts' resignation was inevitable, that that delay might hurt Mr. Ford's chances?
Oh, I don't think so. I think if you look at what Carter said, he hasn't done anything as far as resigning, and how quickly Secretary Butts moved. I think there's a parallel there that, that ought to at least call attention to the Playboy article and the interview Carter had with Norman Mailer, which couldn't even be reprinted, so bad. I think President Ford did the right thing. Secretary Butts did the right thing. I hope the American farmer understands the policies are the same. And I'll be some help in that area. I understand agriculture.
Well, there were a number of farmers groups, as I mentioned before, who did favor Butts and wanted him to stay on. Do you feel that they will be convinced that Butts wasn't forced out?
Oh, I think so. I think what they're concerned about is not a person. I mean, they like Secretary Butts as a man. They're concerned about program. After all, it's a pocketbook issue with America's farmers and farm wives and farm families. We're going to continue the same policies. I assume I'll have even more of a voice in agriculture in the rest of the campaign, and hopefully even next year when I'm vice president.
Yesterday you spoke to the American Bankers Association, and you spoke about Carter's view on defense and foreign policies. You said that they were frightening, to quote you. What specifically do you find frightening about Carter's positions?
Specifically, he doesn't have any policy. That's the frightening part of it. He says we shouldn't be worried about communists and the Italian government. He makes a number of statements that are quite hard to understand. And on the positive side, as I said, President Ford has already met with 120 foreign leaders. He's visited 14 countries. Just seems to me that we want someone in the White House. I don't care whether Democrats, Republicans, or independents, who's had experience in leadership in foreign affairs. It's often overlooked, but it's a very important a part of any election.
Okay, thank you, Senator. Thank you, back to you, Ray.
25th time today. What effect, at this point, do you think the Butts resignation, his remarks, will have on the Fort Dole campaign? What about the farmer vote specifically?
I think there may be a little unsettling effect in farm areas, some farm areas, not all, because Butts was not a favorite of dairy farmers, peanut farmers. He's in some trouble in grain areas because prices are low. It should be a plus, not from the standpoint of Butts, but the standpoint of President Ford among black voters and others who are concerned about crude remarks made by any public servant, or for that matter, any candidate for high office. I think it's going to balance out. It's an opportunity, really, and I think the president can make points.
Would you assess the race as you see it in Pennsylvania as of this hour today?
Well, I'm told it's a toss-up. I hope I can nudge it a little on our side, not just for this visit. I was in Pennsylvania three areas last week and here in Pittsburgh tonight. We believe there's movement in this campaign, and it's in the forward direction. I just believe we're going to carry Pennsylvania. You know, we need these 27 electoral votes. They're very important to both President Ford and Governor Carter. But we believe when people watch the debate tomorrow night, they're going to be more convinced than ever that President Ford's the right choice.
Why? What's going to happen in that debate?
Again, in foreign policy, there's really no contest. And I don't say it critically of Governor Carter. He just hasn't had the experience. President Ford has met with 100 and some foreign leaders. He's visited 14 countries. He's been to Japan, the first president to visit Japan. You know, we depend a lot on exports. It means jobs. We depend a lot on leadership for peace. That's what it's really all about. It just seems to me that President Ford has no equal in foreign policy.
Getting back to those electoral votes, not only the 27 here in Pennsylvania,
right,
but the rest of them, of course. How do you see Ford dual ticket doing, assuming that what so many of the experts are saying, that the South is going to go heavily Carter and perhaps Labor swinging heavily to Carter? Do you read it that way? And if so, can the popular vote carry you over the electoral vote?
Well, you know, the South is starting to crack. Our surveys indicate we're ahead in Louisiana. We're only 2 points down in Mississippi. We have a good chance in Virginia and North Carolina. This is just the tip of the iceberg. We think it could crack up pretty well in the next 3 weeks. We even get good reports from Georgia. Now, I don't really believe we can carry the state of Georgia, but there are changes in the South. No doubt about it, Carter has a labor endorsement, but I think the working men and women are concerned about spending and taxes and gun control and more federal interference, all of which is promised by Governor Carter, and they're going to vote for President Ford, a great many of them, not all of them, but a great many of them.
Do you see a close popular vote or even a possibility of the candidate winning with...
Well, there's some speculation that it might be a minority president. I don't really know. I haven't tried to put my computer to it or in a slide rule, but I just believe that there's enough movement. It's going to be a close race, but the President Ford will win.
We could just get... It's a $250 a plate Republican fundraising dinner tonight at the William Penn, and of course tomorrow night, Senator, we have the foreign policy debate between Governor Carter and President Ford. But Carter and the Democrats say, foreign policy aside, they have the gut issues of the campaign, jobs, the economy, inflation. How do you answer that?
Well, I don't agree with that, of course. Right now, of course, we have the unemployment rates too high, but I think the American people are concerned about inflation. President Ford has cut the inflation rate in half. There are 88 million people working. 3 million have gone back or more in the past 18 months, and it just seems to me that we have a sound economy on our side, plus a man who has demonstrated leadership, President Ford.
On the subject of the foreign policy debate tomorrow, you say that Jimmy Carter frightens you, and Mr. Carter today said he was frightened about the administration's policy toward the spread of nuclear weapons material. How big an issue do you think that might be in the debate tomorrow?
Well, it could be an issue. I think probably it's one that should be discussed. It's certainly a very important issue. I read excerpts from both President Ford and Governor Carter. We're all concerned about the safety and the spread of nuclear arms. I didn't see much in Governor Carter's position to reassure me. Just seems to me that he has no experience in foreign policy, and many Americans, regardless of their policy, would like to have someone around who's had the experience. And again, it's President Ford, and he's going to clean him up in that debate tomorrow night.
Very briefly, you have a debate coming up with Senator Mondale, and there's some talk that you two might upstage the leaders of the tickets.
Well, if we do, there'll only be two of us watching it. I think that's Friday night. Every high school football team in America be playing that night. If I had a choice, I'd go to a football game, and I think most Americans will. But it'd be a spirited contest. We've been debating for years in the Senate. No one ever listened before, and I'm not certain how many will listen next Friday.
You might be surprised. Yeah, right. From the William Penn with Senator Dole, Jack.
And I'm very pleased to be here. I haven't been in Pennsylvania for 3 or 4 days, so I'm glad to be back. I needn't tell anyone in this audience how important the state of Pennsylvania is. It's very important. We're looking for those electoral votes in the great state of Pennsylvania. The polls all over this country are moving in our direction. And I just think in the next 3.5 to 4 weeks, with the help of all good Republicans in this area and throughout the state of Pennsylvania and throughout America, President Ford is going to be elected on November 2nd by a wider margin than anybody might suspect. Now, I've figured out during the past few weeks that if he makes it, I'll make it. So, don't worry about me, just vote for Jerry Ford. That's the kind of a fellow I am. I want to thank Dick Schweiker for his Secret Service detail. I might say, and I think most people know, that Dick and I started in the Congress together. And we've been together in the House, and we moved to the Senate at the same time, and we almost moved into this spot at the same time. I think I figured out the other day, Dick, that I'd been a candidate 4 days for vice president longer than you were, so So, but I want to express my appreciation for the great help Dick Schweiker's been to President Ford, and to his spirit of cooperation. And I can say that very candidly because I know Dick well enough and he knows me well enough. We don't go around trying to kid each other. And that's the way it is. This party is united. And this party's going to win on November 2nd. And to Jim Daniel and Elsie Hillman and Dick Frame and all the other leaders in this great state, we appreciate very much your help. Now, Ed was talking about that phone call that came on August 19th. He didn't tell you all of it, and I won't bore you with it. But early that morning, we had heard on the early news that the list had been narrowed to four, and that the winner, I guess, had to be present to win. You had to be in Kansas City by 12 o'clock for a joint press conference with the president. And so, first on the list was Ambassador Ann Armstrong. Well, I'd heard she was in Scotland, and there's no way she could get to Kansas City from Scotland by 12 o'clock. So I scratched her off the list. The next name was Bill Ruckelshaus, a great Republican from Indiana, but he was in Tacoma, Washington. And besides, his name was too long for a button, so I didn't think he would be any problem. So we scratched him off the list. And that left Senator Baker and Senator Dole, and I told my wife, Elizabeth, if they don't go in alphabetical order, I think we've got a chance. And a little later, the press started gathering in the hall. And our little room, I emphasize that, was right next to the suite occupied by Governor Connally. And I said, Elizabeth, I think it's all over. I think it's going to be Big John. But after about an hour, I said to Elizabeth, I said, why don't you go to the door and put your ear down there and see what the press is saying out in the hallway. That's legal in Kansas City if you listen from the inside out. So, she did. And she came back and said, I heard the name Dole mentioned. Well, we had to decide whether they're talking about pineapple juice or whether someone was applying for relief out in the hallway. But just to play it on the safe side, I started to dress and to shave and do all those things. And we made certain that nobody used the phone, in case it did ring. But just as an added precaution, and because we were so near to the room occupied by Governor Connally, when President Ford called, I said yes before I identified myself, thinking he might have gotten the wrong number. And that's when it started. And the president said, I'm going to go on out to Vail to rest, and you should go to Seattle tomorrow. And I did. And then you should go to Des Moines, Iowa, and then you should go here and here and here, and I did, and I did, and I did, and I'm here tonight. I've never tried ketchup on peanut butter, but I think it might be all right. But John, you've got to agree that pineapple juice is better for you than peanut butter. For one thing, it doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth. Now, Now, as Ed said just in the introduction that I drafted, I really was a lot longer, told a lot more glowing things about me, but you know how U.S. Steel is. When I play golf, huh? Yeah, thanks a lot. You can be transferred, you know that. In fact, you probably already have been transferred. I want to... It's one of my relatives. Many people ask why I didn't eat dinner, and I told them I couldn't afford it. But I'm very touched to be here, but I was not touched nearly as deeply as you are to be here. I promise, and Dick Schweiker knows the hazards when you speak every day two or three times, and the traveling press almost collapses when they see you stand up and say, here goes again. But I've got to tell the bear story. I've had so many requests from the traveling press. And several haven't heard it, and they're threatening to jump off the airplane. And I keep opening the door, but no one jumps. They're really good. They're getting my name right now. But in any event, this happened in some area that no one here ever came from or will ever return to. This bear walked into the bar and ordered a beer and plunked a $5 bill down on the counter. And, of course, the bartender didn't know what to do, and he went back to the cooler and took the beer out, took the cap off, put it on the counter, grabbed the $5 bill, rushed back to the boss, said, boss, a bear just walked in and gave me $5 for beer. What should I do? And he said, well, give it back a nickel. It won't know the difference. So he put a nickel on the counter. But after a while, he just couldn't stand it any longer. So he walked around, he took a stool next to the bear, and he said in a very serious voice, said, you know, we don't have many bears in here. And the bear said, I don't suppose you do at $4.95 a bottle. So. Hey. Now, there's a moral to that story, but we haven't figured it out. Someone asked me, Dick, why I wanted to be vice president. I said, well, it's indoor work and no heavy lifting. They're asking about the Dole-Mondale debates. What are you going to do when you debate Mondale? I just hold up a no sign, and he holds up a yes sign, and it's all over. That's about the way it goes. Somebody says, what are your plans for the first 100 days? And I think anybody running for vice president who has any plans for the first 100 days is kidding himself. I may not do anything the first 100 days. And maybe not even the second 100 days. And I know a vice president who's been there 4 years and haven't done anything. So if we're asked to make any policy decisions in that debate, I'm going to plead the Fifth Amendment. But seriously, it's good to be here. It's good to be anywhere if you're a Republican, believe me. I was the chairman of the Republican Party during Watergate, but I hasten to add that that was my night off. As I recall, I was on a job in Chicago or somewhere. That was about halfway through my tenure as chairman, and I've always wanted to meet Nixon. I thought we ought to get together. You know, I was chairman, he was president. It seemed to me we ought to meet sometime during his term. And so I kept calling Bob Haldeman. He used to work there, you know. And I called and I called and I called, and finally he called one day. And I was really honored to get a call from Haldeman, because generally it was Carlyle or someone like that.
But Haldeman said, I understand you want to see the president. I said, yes, I certainly do. He said, it'd be on Channel 9 at 7:30. So we had a very close relationship. And I remember when I left the chairmanship, I was flown to Camp David in a helicopter and walked all the way home. But I didn't catch cold because I was given a Camp David jacket. And we've come a long way since then. Some have moved up and some have moved out. And some are in the process. But we're about to undertake a very serious election. We're about to make a very serious decision. And I believe, as John Hines so very well articulated, President Ford has the experience. President Ford has the competence. He's demonstrated leadership. And I don't think it's a choice we take very lightly. And I say to this, my Republican friends, oh yes, we're Republicans, we want to elect Republicans. But I say this to my Democrat friends and my independent friends, that's important to them too. It's important for them to make the right choice. I don't have any personal quarrel with Governor Carter. I wouldn't know where to start. And I say that very seriously. I can talk about his positions on the issues. Not all of them. We only have about 30 days left because he has many, many positions. Of course, we've had our problems in recent days. I said yesterday, I think President Ford made the right decision insofar as Secretary Butts was concerned. I think American people might stop and reflect now on what Governor Carter said over the years. And I kind of wonder about a person very honestly and very sincerely, whether it be a man or a woman or a politician or a businessman or a labor leader or whatever, who can always find fault, who can find fault with everybody, his neighbors, his associates, his golfing partners, with everyone. If you take a look at what Governor Carter has said, he likes to use those buzzwords. He talks about loopholes and the rich and how the rich go free and the rich do this and the rich pay no taxes. He talks about former President Johnson as lying and cheating and distorting the facts. He talks about President Ford being insensitive and lacking compassion and lacking leadership. As I said earlier today, Governor Carter wouldn't recognize leadership if he bumped into it on the street. He doesn't know what it is. But I kind of wonder. I wonder sometimes about a person who can always find fault and always make harsh judgments and then run to the phone and apologize and say, I'm sorry, I didn't really mean that. I wonder about a person like that. He was quick to condemn Clarence Kelly, the FBI chief. Oh, and he was quick to condemn Secretary Butts. He said the president lacked leadership. He should have fired him on the spot. Well, I've looked around and I've read some of the things that Governor Carter said over the years. He once embraced arch segregationist Lester Maddox as, and I quote, the essence of the Democratic Party. That's what Governor Carter said about Lester Maddox and told Georgia voters in 1970 he was, and I quote, proud to have as my running mate. This is Lester Maddox, the man who threatened with pickaxe blacks and black customers with axe handles who came to his restaurants for drumsticks. And this is the same man who's given interviews lately. Some you've read, some you're anticipating. Some have pictures. But buried beneath those pictures, if you get beyond the pictures, You're going to learn something about Governor Carter and about how he feels about different things. And if you read with his interview with Norman Mailer, you learned something there. And he gives a lot of interviews, and he makes a lot of harsh judgments. And I just say to those people in this audience and those others who may be listening or whatever, I think we ought to take a hard look. You know, I think I can spot hypocrisy when I see it, whether it be in the area I've just mentioned or the area of tax reform. He's charged up and down the hill on tax reform. He said the night of his acceptance speech, and I thought it was a pretty good speech, as far as it went. And it went all over the country, I guess. But he said in that speech, our national tax system is a disgrace. And I think many Americans share that view. He didn't tell us that the Democrats have controlled the Congress 22 out of 22 years. The Democrats have controlled the Congress 40 out of the past 44 years. No, he didn't tell us that. But he talked about the rich and the loopholes, as I said, and how some go scot-free if they have money. He was talking to that average American he so often likes to talk about, the middle-class American, the poor American, and that he has a vision for America. He talked about the small businessmen and the farmers and the blacks and the Spanish-speaking. And he's going to change all that, but 8 days later he went up to New York, a little club called the 21 Club, right next to McDonald's, I understand. I've never been there. But he met with a group of small businessmen, Henry Ford and some of those other small businessmen. And he said, don't worry about this tax thing. I'm not going to do much for a year. That's after he promised in 75 to show us his tax reform. Then he promised in 76 to give us specifics. Now he says we have to wait another year. Well, I thought there was a rather interesting column yesterday by Bill Sapphire. He's always talking about openness and candor and public records and public information. Why doesn't he make available his corporate tax returns and partnership returns? He wants everybody to see everything. How many loopholes are buried in those tax returns? And it's one thing to stand before the so-called average American and talk about the rich and talk about loopholes and talk about the tax system. If you don't tell them what you did. 1975, and I'm for the investment tax credit. Don't misunderstand me. I'm talking about hypocrisy. He runs around saying that the rich and all this, they don't pay their fair share. He paid 12.8% of his income in tax in 1975. His tax liability was about $58,000. That's what he was going to send to the government until he took $40-some thousand off, $42,000, for investment tax credits on some peanut machinery he bought. And I don't quarrel with that. It stimulates the economy, stimulates business. And when he was asked by the press, after I think I may have mentioned it in passing, he said, that's why we need tax reform. That was his answer. Now, had he not taken the investment tax credit, or had he not been eligible, and he was perfectly legal, that would have been a loophole, I guess. But since it benefited him, that's not a loophole. And I just say that somewhere hypocrisy must end. And he's been running around and charging President Ford with this and accusing President Ford of that. I don't know where it ends. He made some statements on taxes in an Associated Press interview. And I hope the businessmen here were alert and read the interview. Said, we're going to tax all income alike. We're going to tax all income alike. Now, that has rather broad meaning if you think about it. Out the window goes the capital gains treatment. If you buy stock, if you're a farmer and have breeding stock, if you sell your farm, sell your property, you're going to get taxed right across the board, all income the same. That's what he said. It's not what I said. That's what he said. He said in a magazine published September, October 6, the issue of Liberty Magazine, a Seventh-day Adventist publication. He was asked how he felt about taxation of church property. And he replied, and these are his words, not mine, "I would favor the taxation of church properties other than the church building itself." Now, that's his statement. And I find it, frankly, rather incredible that Mr. Carter wants to impose taxes on church-owned hospitals, senior citizens' homes, orphanages. And I think he ought to tell us what kind of tax you're talking about, income tax, property tax, local tax. And what do you want to tax, Governor Carter? And he also said in that Associated Press interview that every family above the median income would pay higher taxes because he's going to balance the budget and unemployment and inflation, cut the defense budget, and do all this and still have everything. I think Governor Carter forgot one thing. He didn't know what the median income was for an American family. And the median income for an American family is not $50,000, as Senator Mondale tried to say the following day. It's about $14,000 per year. For an American family, that's a working husband, working wife, and anybody else in that family. And he said we distorted the facts. We didn't distort the facts. He said it. I didn't say it. And I make these points to point up...